thank you for joining us. First, I want to thank our sponsor, BASF. And I understand Kit had to leave this morning, but Nick is here. Nick, thank you for all your support. Our keynote speaker this year is Dr. Alan Ballou, who came to us from an experience that we had with the Composite Panel Association last year, where I saw his brother, and we got to talking about should we look at another economic presentation, because it was an outstanding presentation. And I got a chance to look at some of the work that Alan did on internet, et cetera. And they're twins. Alan's older. He's 8 minutes older. Which, if you had a brother that was 8 minutes younger, you would never let him forget it. But so we have the senior Ballou with us today. And when I proposed this topic to the board, I have never had a speaker, everybody said, yes, I know them, I've heard them, they are outstanding, and I agree. Of course, I always agree with people who agree with me. That's a good thing. Or what is it they say? Like minds think alike, and idiots always agree. I don't know. But he's here today. To talk about economics and, you know, what do you do in a down economy? And when the economy took a slip some months back, I called his office and I said, we're renaming your presentation to what the hell just happened. So I hope that we're going to find out some of that. But it's an amazing topic. It's an amazing speaker. And I want to appreciate you being here and giving your full attention. So, Alan.
Thank you. Thank you. It's very nice here. We get to talk about economics after lunch. I mean, what a great idea, don't you think? And for an hour. This is fun. I like questions, so please feel free to ask questions along the way. You're not interrupting. I like it. So do that, and then we'll make sure there's time for Q&A, too, if you're more comfortable with that format. I'm also, you know, very comfortable just talking about everything except politics. I'm not here as a political analyst. I'm not here to talk about politics in any way. We can talk about policy and its impact on the economy, but because it's a presidential election year, I'd just like to get that out of the way. Now, the most important thing you probably should ask me, but most people are far too polite to ask me, is if I'm any good at my job. You would assume so since I was brought in, but really the most important question is, can I really forecast and forecast well? So I want to start off with this and show the answer is yes. We do this every year at ITR Economics, which is the name of the firm, and we do a scorecard, and we look at everything we forecast. These are just the headline items. What you can see here is a duration column, which says this is how long the forecast was in place by the time we got to December 2014. And then in extreme right, you see the accuracy, how good was the forecast that was in place by the end of 2014. So if you heard me in 13, if you heard me in early 14, could you have depended upon the forecast? And the answer is yes. Most people don't publish, actually I don't know other firms that do publish. We publish all of ours when we do specific groups, specific companies. We always go back and review the forecast. We hold ourselves accountable. We're very pleased to share with you that since 1985, so for 30 years, we have an accuracy of 94.7% or better 12 months into the future. So you can look at the future with confidence when you're using methodology like ours. And the methodology is going to give you a view of the future that is good. You're going to find that life is good for you as you go forward. And there are bumps in the road, there are significant issues in the future, but for now, things are good. Let's go look at the U.S. economy. This is not dollars, this is not an index, this is a rate of growth. So the 4 on the scale is 4% growth. The 0 is 0% growth, and there's a minus 4% growth. So what you see is GDP, the orange line, is slowing down a little as the economy gets a little more sluggish. The industrial production, the blue line, quarterly year-over-year measurement is certainly slowed down. This is when most people start straight-line forecasting. Most people will start saying, look, it's going down, it's going to keep going down, we're going to go into recession. We're not. Some segments of the economy already are in recession. If you're in the oil and gas industry and you're trying to sell pieces to rotary rigs, you know, you're in a depression, let alone a recession. But for the macroeconomic view, the economy is just slowing down. Now, I'd like you to know two quick things with me here. One is that we spend most of our time above that zero line, which means the U.S. economy is continuing to grow year over year. For the most part, we're growing and growing and growing. I say that because there's a prominent view in the United States that says that we're an old and dying economy. Certainly not true. There's no basis for that. Do you know that over 50% of America thinks China is or will be larger than the United States as we go into the future? There's no potential for that. And I can quickly go through that with you. We only have an hour only from your point of view, but it's hard to develop, you know, elongated themes. This country is not in danger of being eclipsed by China. We're 70% larger than China. And if you want an interesting little data point, as you talk to people on the plane ride home, ask them which country is physically larger, the United States or China. Most people say China. The answer is we're the exact same size. So we have 310 million people living in a landmass where they have 1.4 billion people. I pick here. That's an easy one. I live in New Hampshire. That says a lot. You know, we're pretty outnumbered people. This is where I want to be, so it's good. I want to show you before we're done some problems in the United States. I want you to know I'm not ignorant of the problems, and we're going to talk about how they're going to impact into the short term and even 15 years from now. We're going to talk about things that are going right in America. And if I do my job right, you're going to leave here going, my gosh, this is a lot of good news. There's a lot going on right in this country. I need to invest in my business. I need to be ready to be busier because this country is getting ready for another growth period. This country is getting ready for some great stuff, and I need to make sure that my business is ready. So if I do my job right, you're going to leave here enthused. If you leave here confused, I failed. If you leave here still sour on our prospects as an economy, then I haven't answered your questions enough. Okay, here's where we're going. This is the forecast that was in place up until a few months ago. The only reason I'm showing you this is because I want you to see on the right-hand side the rate of growth slowed down. Right when we thought it would, Robert just challenged me with tell you why. The answer is because of fear. It had to do with China. It had to do with CEOs that still have a great recession hangover. So as soon as things seem to be soft in China, a lot of people went, oh, it's happening, and they started saying no. And as CEOs started saying no, it came after the oil prices already went down, which already hurt 10% of industrial production, which is the oil patch. So the oil patch was hurt, and then China came along, and business leaders started saying no. You have to start saying yes to take advantage of the fact that 9 months from now, you're going to be a lot busier. Actually, in 6 months, you're going to really notice it. In 9 months, you're going to be a lot busier. And you're going to want to make sure you have everything in place. So you can't think like the herd at this point. You've got to be thinking ahead. The slowdown was anticipated, happening as we thought. Look on the left-hand side. You notice that all kinds of growth in industrial production. Well, that hasn't gone away. The data was revised by the Federal Reserve Board, so I had to revise the forecast. But you see it's still up. And you see on the right-hand side, it's still slowing down as we thought. And we're going to see a little uptick in activity in 2016. Second half of 17, it slows down just a little bit, but it's above zero the whole time. There's nothing in the forecast for a recession through the near term. Just some softness in consumer spending, which is going to impact some consumer behavior, which I imagine will lead through to some of you in this room. Feel like GDP better is growing. And I use growing on purpose, not recovery. Growth means you're above the previous record high. GDP is at a record high. We're growing. Do you know, according to Fox, and I look at all the sources, don't say, oh, he's a Fox guy, because that's not true. I look at them all. And I look at their surveys and all that sort of stuff. Fox polls shows that 65% of America thinks we're in recession. We're growing. We have record high employment, record high retail sales, record high GDP, and 65% of America is wrong. Does that disturb you? Disturbs me. I want to know how come they're so wrong. What do you think? Not rhetorical. What do you think?
Media.
Sure, media has a lot to do with it. And Hollywood does too, by the way. You listen to TV shows now with the ears of an economist, you're going to hear a lot of shows say, well, in this economy, whether it's a crime drama or whether it's a comedy, you hear it in this economy like there's something bad going on. And politicians are always talking about something going on wrong. This economy is doing really well. You probably heard the middle class is disappearing. Not true, by the way. I can show you that. You probably have heard that wages are going down. No. Show you that too before we're done. There's so much misinformation out there, it's absolutely incredible. The other answer besides media is that those 65% of the American population, those people are watching Family Guy. And they think it's a documentary. They're just not where we need them to be, if you know what I mean. So get us to watch. There are some really easy things to let us know what's going on. I have to go through this data with you just for a little bit. Trust me, that is necessary because a lot of my graphs use rate of change. So I want to show you where it comes from. It's just a mathematical function. You take monthly data, very hard for you to read from the back of the room. I get that. But the monthly data could be your sales. It could be an entire country. It doesn't matter. Let's assume it's your sales. You cannot see a pattern often in monthly data. It tends to be too volatile, and it's really hard to see what's happening, and it's hard to forecast. So we smooth it out into what's called a three-month moving total, self-defining term. For the three-month moving total, patterns start to develop. And what you see in this data series here, this company, is that the company is growing. The quarterly numbers are generally getting larger. So leadership can feel good about, hey, we're growing our company. And it's easy to start, you know, patting yourself on the back, and we all should when we do something good. Well, when we want to forecast where we're going, though, we need to convert to a rate of growth, a rate of change. So we do the year-over-year comparison using that formula on the screen, and we come up with a growth rate. Now, the growth rate is slow. So our numbers are larger, but the growth rate is slow. Some of that's mathematical. We have to figure out whether it's just the math or whether there's something going on. To do that, I go to another smoothing item called the 12-month moving total. Self-descriptive, I hope, 12 months added together, recompute every month. We do a year-over-year comparison using that formula, and I come up with a growth rate of my 12-month moving total on a year-over-year basis. So my growth rate is slowed down to 12.7%. So the question is, why have I slowed down? Why aren't I growing anymore at 26.7%? Now, there's only four reasons, my friends. Only four. One is the economy's working against you. Most common answer. Number two is something's happening in your industry, and it's impacting your business, because it doesn't have to be just the economy, it can be your industry. The third thing is it's a black swan event. And in companies, you know, like us, it's usually a personal black swan event. CEO had a heart attack. Major, you know, your major sales driver left the company for other waters. You know, something personal happens, and that's a black swan event. The fourth thing is not something we like to talk about, but the fourth thing is businesses screw up, and leadership makes a mistake. And that can drive your year-over-year growth. And this is a report card on all those things. So as you compare yourself to the world around you, you begin to see how you fit in, and you begin to see into the future. And when you find leading indicators, like this company did, the company's in green, the leading indicator is in blue, it's really easy to see that, hey, there's a great recession coming, which we did, and we were in print about that, and it's going to impact your company, which, you know, we warned all kinds of people about. There's a recovery coming, and you got to get ready for it. There's a slowdown coming. I mean, it's easy to see around corners when you have the right leading indicators. And you can also see what's happening within an industry if you have the right leading indicators. But the question is here, if you know that there's something coming, are you willing to adjust the sales for the prevailing winds? Some people are, some people aren't. If you're willing to adjust the sales for the prevailing winds, you maximize your profit potential. If you maximize your profit potential, you can actually make money even in a downturn because you've addressed the issues and you got your ship ready for what will be happening. So by knowing what's coming, you have time to react. You have 6 to 9, 12 months, plenty of time to react. And you change things so that you can stay profitable. When should you hire? When should you let attrition take care of your workforce? When should you build up inventory? When should you let it go down? When's a good time to expand operations, take on a new product line? When do we get into all the different things like adding capital equipment so we can improve processes, smooth out the flow, all that sort of stuff happens at the right time in the economy to maximize the internal rate of return, the IRR. Okay. We can also use this same methodology to look at an industry and see agricultural chemical productions, which is where you fit. That's the NAICS code that you fit in. And the top two trend lines are the rates of change. So the rates of change are going up. That means that production is going up. And that bottom blue line is what we want to forecast. So production is rising. So the question is, how long will it continue to rise? Well, because the rates of change are positive, I can tell you that the upside business cycle pressure is positive and production is going to continue to go forward into the future. It's only a mild 1.7% gain. It's actually milder than normal. That's what the MTN stands for. But this mild rise is still rising. There's increased demand, which is putting some pressure on production. So production is going up. A typical length of rise says that this production is going to increase until about September 2017. So if things are running hot and true and normal, which is what's going on in the U.S. right now, we should see that the demand for product is just going to improve through the next 24 months or so.
And as that happens, you have to ask yourself, am I ready for the increased production? And am I going to have the cash flow necessary to do that? Will I be able to make more money? Or will I have increased inefficiencies that will drain my cash? Because at the end of the day, we all know cash is king. All right, your world is getting better. Let's talk about what that means in other areas, too. Oil prices are going up. So the cost of oil, the cost of energy, the cost of the inputs into production will be going up. I know that because this leading indicator is going up. I know that because Saudi Arabia can't afford to keep oil prices this low. I know this because Russia's falling apart. And those of us that are older know that when Russia falls apart, really bad things happen in the world. And we're getting a taste of that in Syria right now. The only reason they're paying attention to Syria is because things are so bad at home that Putin needs to be a hero and needs to be seen as a world leader. We know that from history. And Putin is, I hope you're not Russians in disguise. And if you are, then I'm really Brian. Okay, let's get that straight. It's really important to know. Putin's just a sociopathic thug. I mean, he's just on stage and enjoying every minute of it. And the Russian people are very happy to follow him. 84% of the population thinks he can do whatever he wants. They're more than happy to follow him. That's a dangerous situation. So as their economy falls apart, they become more aggressive. That's what Russia does. The world needs higher oil prices so that Russia doesn't attack somewhere else. Venezuela is falling apart. Literally nobody cares. That's an easy one. And as a capitalist nation, we go, let them. Another communist success story. Nigeria is falling apart. That's really dangerous because that's the largest nation in Africa. So if they fall apart, social instability, really bad things happen. The Saudis need it because they're a petrochemical kingdom. They're not able to fund their petrochemical kingdom off of $46 a barrel. They need 93. And as that happens, then they risk what happens in the Arab world when people don't get the money they need. History tells us the last couple of years, what can the Saudis expect? Nothing like a little revolution or civil war or civil unrest. Do they want that? Of course not. Ease the single order. Raise prices. Keep everybody happy. Prices are going up. If that's a factor in your production, which it should be, prices will be going up from today's 45, 46 to 58 to 63 by the time we get to the end of 2016, and more upside pressure in 2017. Really comfortable for the U.S., really good for U.S. manufacturers. It'll help production in Texas. It will not, in other places, it will not help the rotary rig count because we have so many increased efficiencies, the rotary rig count stays the same. Just so when you don't hear rotary rigs going up, you don't think that we're wrong. These are just 2 points I want you to know why this country's on the right path. One is that we use a lot less energy and oil now than we used to. You know, our consumption of oil used to match GDP growth. It doesn't anymore. Look at all that white space in between. We're a much more efficient nation than we used to be, and there are lots of reasons for that, but the fact of the matter is we're doing much better, and we consume less, and we have something to be proud of. And as we use alternative forms of energy, as we find a different way to do things, it strengthens our nation. And we now produce 90% of the energy that we consume. That means our Canadian friends should be worried because there comes a time when we don't need Alberta's oil because the EPA and environmentalists view it as dirty oil. And so there comes a time when Canada does not sell a lot of oil to the United States. Right now, 99% of it comes to the United States. That can easily slow down. Our second largest source of oil is Mexico. And we'll always buy oil from Mexico because that's a stabilizing effect on our southern neighbor. It's like a foreign aid kind of thing. Little aside, off the subject of oil, if you haven't invested in Mexico, you really need to. Mexico is an up-and-coming nation. Everything's getting better in Mexico except the drug problem. And actually, it's our drug problem, but I mean, their crime and violence and cartels are still terrible. Just get the K&R insurance if you're going to do business there. Kidnap and ransom insurance. Oh, look at your company photo, you know, the corporate photo, see who's on the end, and send that person. That's it. If you want to be an economist about it, don't learn your name. Just think of them as a unit. You. Okay, that's wholehearted. To be a forecasting economist, you have to have no emotional content. And I'm male and I'm an economist. This is not hard. This is easy to have no emotional content. And I'm a New Englander. I think it's bread out of this, as a matter of fact. Mexico will continue to buy from. Play international economists with me for a minute. What happens when the U.S. no longer needs to buy Middle Eastern oil? What do we say when problems develop in Syria? Your problem. Don't care. Absolutely. Hey, Lebanon's on fire. We say, okay, bad day. know.
He should have been all along.
Yeah, well, yeah. We won't go there, but I heard you. Yeah. And when we no longer care, we also need them to project a lot more, lot less military strength into the Middle East, which means that we can cut down on the DOD budget. If we cut down on the DOD budget, in theory, it would reduce your taxes. It's not going to, by the way. We'll just find more creative ways to spend it, but this money going to the DOD. So, you know, this is our future. Nations would literally kill to have this. We have hundreds of years, 300 years to be exact, estimated reserves, oil and natural gas in this country. We can power gen the U.S. for 300 years. You know what the same firm estimates the longevity is for Europe? 28 years. We are the nation to be in. You want to know why people are coming to America? This is a large reason why. And as they come to America to open up companies and expand, they're hiring. And as they hire, it creates opportunity, and they pay taxes, and wonderful things are going on. This is fantastic news for your future. This is a reason why you should feel good about life. Now, there are problems, and I'm going to quickly run through these problems with you. But I don't want you to think that they're overwhelming, but I want you to know that I'm aware. China is a mess. China's economy is not growing at 6.3%. They lie, okay? It's not. It's as simple as that. The chief finance minister for communist China, his name is We Lai. Just remember that. Simple as that. Even the Chinese don't believe their own numbers. And I have quotes and articles on that. The bottom line is here, China is a mess. I understand that. But China will be able to fix it. Their sovereign debt issue is not the issue, it's their banking debt. I have debt up there. It's not our debt issue. Their banks are not collecting on loans. The unperforming loan portfolio, non-performing loan portfolio, is through the roof. And the shadow lending market is also stumbling badly for non-performing loans. Because state-owned enterprises are loaning to state-owned, or borrowing from state-owned banks, and this is creating a cash drain, a real crisis in credit. Now, the whole world wants to ignore it, and we're perfectly willing to ignore it as the United States of America. We want to ignore it because a failed China really hurts us. Not in exports. They're only 0.7% of our GDP in terms of exports, but because they hold so much of our treasuries. They're the largest foreign holder of U.S. treasuries. So if they fail and no longer buy treasuries, we're cooked because we're a debtor nation. So we ignore their problems, and if we ignore their problems, the rest of the world ignores their problems, and nothing really bad happens right now. It does down the road. Let me throw in another problem, and that is that they have a major demographic imbalance. Their one-child policy with gender selection, really not a great idea. They've created 125 million young men without a commensurate amount of women. What does that mean about the future, by the way? Yeah, I saw you laughing over there. Yeah, this is not good, right? What happens in a population with men without women? Let me ask you another way. What doesn't happen? Yeah, no kids. Actually, right. You know, this is easy math. You know, you can pass whatever laws you want, but science is immutable on this. There are no kids in the future. And as there are no kids in the future, you know, you have a real problem in that you have an inverted pyramid. Aging people, younger people, not enough young people to support aging people. This is an unstable environment. Eventually, it topples. And that is China because of their policy. Now, they have officially reversed it, but unofficially, it's still in place. And it takes two generations to undo that sort of thing. So nothing's going to happen to the plus side for China. Don't worry about them. They're not your issue. The instability of more or less Russia, we'll take care of that at higher prices. B2B activity, I'll show you really quickly what's going down. South America is in recession because of drought, because of corruption, and because of nationalism. Brazil has developed a strong nationalistic attitude, buy Brazilian, made in Brazilian, we don't want foreign goods in this country, and that's choking off their economy. It's a fundamentally flawed idea. It makes politicians look good, it gets them reelected, but it is really bad for their economy. And when they have soft commodity prices punishing their exports, they're in a recession that is deep, and it's going to be painful, and it's dragging down Peru and Colombia and Chile, Argentina, all at the same time. U.S. debt is an issue. I'll show you that. I want you to see the world is a pretty good place with this graphic. It's a heat map. Green is good. Pink and red are bad. The deeper the red, the worse the nation. So you see the worst in the world is that right in Eastern Europe. That's Ukraine. All right, just so you're wondering, where's the worst spot on Earth to be right now? It's Ukraine. And then it's Brazil. Russia is worse off, but they have Chinese economists helping them out. Look at North America. That's a pretty sunny green, don't you think? Look at the U.S. There's a lot of good going on. Now look at Europe. And see all the green going on in Europe? Good stuff happening in Europe right now. And when you consider the fact that Europe is twice as large as China, you have to ask yourself, why do we focus so much on China when Europe is twice as large? And the strength of Europe that is developing now is going to be a real positive for the global economy in 2016. It's slow, it's not vibrant, it's not exciting, but they are in a clear recovery and it's going to continue. And next time somebody says, well, China is the second largest economy on the planet, remember that Europe combined, EU29, is the same size as the United States. So on a country-by-country basis, they're pretty small, although Germany is the fourth largest and France is the fifth largest on the planet. On a combined economic basis, they're a behemoth. They're the United States, and they matter. And things are going pretty well there. Good news. When I look at the global indicators, I'm concerned by that red line. It's not going up, but two out of the three are going up. I have this in my concern section because of that red line. That's Asia not doing well. But the rest is showing life, and I think on balance, you know, I put it here on the side of caution, but I could easily have put it on the other side out of two out of three, or at least moving in the right direction. When you want to be worried about things, you can look at the U.S. economy, which is what this graphic is all about, and notice that most of the economy is on the back side of the business cycle in that orange-yellow section called phase C, slower growth, and most of it seems to be going downhill, and it is. But you see the word housing? That's a leading indicator. And housing is not going down. Housing is going up. Existing home sales, new home sales, building of homes, all the things that are important to you is on the right side of the economy. So while the news can be coming at you with negative, 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 remember this graphic that we're going to go through that soft landing. There are leading indicators to support that, and I'm going to show them to you. Of ongoing concern still is that some key leading indicators have maybe, emphasize, italicized, maybe just started to move up. PMI, that could be just noise that latest month. I don't know. It's too early to tell. So it's working on the negative side because that's where it belongs. And right now it's saying the economy is going to slow into the second quarter of 2016. Inventories, the relationship to new orders, maybe that's a rise. Too early to tell, so I kept it on the negative side. It's saying the economy is going to slow through the first quarter of 16. The U.S. composite leading indicator may be a rise, too early to tell, notice the theme here. And it then is saying the economy is going to be soft into the second quarter of 2016. None of them signaling recession. None of them at a depth and a dynamic that would signal recession, but they are signaling slower growth. And the stock market, if you like this as a leading indicator, by the way, you're in the majority. It is not a good leading indicator. It is just not. It can lag, it can be coincident, it can ignore what's going on. It is saying downside business cycle pressure on the U.S. economy. It is saying that the stock market has still got some more problems to work through. I do not have a forecast for the stock market to give you. That's not what I do. That's a guaranteed way to be wrong. So I try not to do that. It's much too emotional and too many levers being pulled by too many people for me to want to forecast the stock market. And the fact that the downside business cycle pressure probably has a little more to go. And that's not a great time to jump into equities just at the moment. But when you do jump into equities in the future, you want to be careful with the Caterpillar and Volkswagen. Just saying. Okay? Anything you do or don't do is of your own doing and volition. Actual results may vary. Check with your broker for details. Okay? Soon not your economy. B2B activity is certainly negative. I know, all these negatives, but we've got to cover them. The rates of change on top. That is down, the bottom blue line, in recession. It's milder than normal, but it's in recession. And the typical length of decline says it's going to end around March 2016. Typical is a big word. It's an important word. So the softness is going to last from where we are now in October. It's going to last for another 5 months. It's going to be painful. If in your community you're tied to manufacturers who export because of the strong dollar, and if you're tied to B2B manufacturers in the area because the city or town you live in has a lot of that component, they're feeling much more pain than in other parts of the country. But that pain is going to end as we approach March 2016. We hear a lot about healthcare in the United States. It's on my negative agenda. What are the top blue line? Save you the eye chart strain. We're the most expensive nation of all these nations listed here. It's been flat for several years because GDP's grown. It's also been flat for several years because of middle class under the Affordable Care Act not spending as much because they don't go as much because the deductibles are higher and their out-of-pocket is higher. But it has certainly been a real help to other people. So we're not going to talk about whether it's good or bad. That's not our job here today. All we know is that the cost has leveled off as it has in a lot of other nations. And it's more really expensive. The expense, this is a hand visual, like a hand puppet. We track with other nations age-wise, so babies and teens and 20s and 30s and 40s. We track with all other nations, even though we're the top line, until we get to be about 57. So if you're 57 or so in this room, you are a problem, because we get to be 57 and we do one of those hockey sticks while the rest of the world barely moves up. We scream up. And I'm 59, by the way, just to let you know I'm part of the problem, too. And it's because we need to be fixed. And we want to be fixed. We expect to be fixed. Test me, test me, test me. Run the test. Give me the pill. Do everything you can. And now I'm 82, and I have all these problems. And it's like, fix me, fix me, fix me. I know you can. You're holding back. Why are you holding back? And run the test and do everything that you can do. You can have three major things wrong with you, and you're 92. People are still going to do everything they can to make you better so you can crank out another 3 months in this country. And in other parts of the world, they look at you when you're 82 or 92, and you have all those problems. They go, what did you expect? By the way, you're going to die. Make peace with that. It's a cultural difference in this country. It's all it is. It's cultural. And I'm not saying it's good or bad, by the way, because I'm not 82 and I'm not 92, and it's not my job to decide whether that's good or bad. I'm just an economist. What's the one solution to the problem? There's only really one. There are forms and variations, but there's really only one solution to this problem, which is... Well, that's a form of the solution to the problem. That's a nice way to put it. But really, what he meant to say is baby boomers must die. We baby boomers, we have to go before this problem is fixed. It actually should be on a t-shirt. Baby boomers must die. Don't wear that here in Florida because they're slow, but they are crappy. You'll never make it.
They carry guns here.
Yeah, they carry guns here. That's right. And your aim is not good. It's not as bad as Texas, by the way. Okay.
Bigger guns.
Now, my brother Ryan has a solution. I think it's eloquent, and it can work, because that is the only solution. He believes we should start a war involving only old people. It takes care of several things at once. It'll be a slow war. Standing Army is here in Florida. This is, you know, this is ground zero. This is where it begins, but it spreads from there. Where do we go? He thinks we should invade Canada, just get the oil, get everything we need, but it seems so peaceful, it doesn't seem right. Do you have any other solutions that might work? Change the laws. Do you think the laws are going to change, really? Nah, I don't think so. We could develop new technology like regenerative medicine. I look into this, I try to keep the pulse on this. And regenerative medicine is about 15 years away. I was at a medical conference where they're talking about really reducing poverty, increasing food, increasing the health of people, and the docs that were talking about that were very eloquent, Harvard and all kinds of places. I said, how long is that going to take? They said, about two generations. I said, well, we self-correct by then. You know, this is not going to be an issue after one generation goes, so you know, you'll look like a genius, but it'll be by natural selection. Which is another solution, by the way. Take the warning labels off. Just let the best and brightest survive. Different approach. Yeah, so this is a really tough situation. I'm bringing it up because this bankrupts the United States. We can't afford what we have now. We have to borrow every day to maintain Medicare, Medicaid, prescription drugs, and Social Security. And so this is going to double in the years to come because the amount of us that will be over 65 and over 75 and over 85 is going to ratchet up quickly. And this becomes a totally unsustainable model. And when Brian and I do the math, we come up with 2015. You're all going to get a book called Prosperity in the Age of Decline. We detail this. But the bottom line is we can only afford this for about 15 more years. And only because there's inflation coming, as Dr. Bernanke was very smart in how he financed all of this. We also have a lot of debt. And a lot of you in this room may be very concerned about the debt in the United States. It's the second highest it's ever been. It's going in the wrong direction. I get your drift. I understand completely. But it's very affordable right now because interest rates are so doggone low. And with very low interest rates, it's you know, somewhere around 5% of the budget. This is manageable. But when interest rates go up, and they will, and everybody knows they're going to be going up, including the federal government, when the interest rates go up, the CBO, Congressional Budget Office, is estimating this is going to take 25% of the federal budget. So while health care takes over 50%, interest rates on debt is going to take another 25%. That leaves a very thin 25% or less for everything else, which doesn't work mathematically. We're on the road to bankruptcy. We're on the road to Greece, by the way. And nothing's being done. That's what the book is about. Now, if I left it there, there's no reason for you to read the book. Really. But it talks about how you can make money knowing what I just told you. And how you can position it if you have two and four-year-old children at home. What should you do? If your kids are in their 20s, what should they do? If you're in your 30s or 40s, what should you do? If you're in your 50s, how you can smile and enjoy life, know this isn't going to really impact you. If you're in your 70s, how you're not even going to know what's going to happen. It's coming to the whole house. Different things to look forward to here. So you look pretty young there. Can I ask a little girl with the white shirt on? How old are you?
28.
By the way, you look younger, just to let you know. I don't know if that's a plus or minus, but you look younger. So. You're going to be 43 when the Great Depression comes, because around the year 2030, we're going into the second Great Depression. So 43 years old, how do you feel about that when you're 43?
It's going
to
suck.
There's that. In case you didn't hear him, he said it's going to be bad. And that's one way to look at it. What I want you to do is read the book and say, wow, what an opportunity. Because if you do this right over the next 15 years, my friend, you're going to find yourself creating enough of a nest egg that you're going to turn into a fortune in the Great Depression. It becomes a catalyst for taking a relatively modest amount of cash, creating a fortune that's going to take care of you for the rest of your life. So look forward to the Great Depression. Don't tell people you're doing that, by the way, because they really look at you funny. Okay. Those are the bad things. None of that impacts the next few years. 15 years on the debt, 15 years on the health care, and the rest of it's all short-term stuff. Let's look at the good things going on. Then we're going to get to the consumer in your markets. All right, deficit spending is going to continue. That just means that the Congress isn't going to embrace austerity anytime soon. They're just not. You can just get that out of there. The world is relatively calm, so we're not going to bankrupt ourselves going to war because despite the fact that that would ultimately would help, we're not going to do it. And right now, we're not in an active, expensive shooting war, so it doesn't matter. Syria doesn't matter economically, and ISIS doesn't matter as far as an economic point of view goes. When we look at things that point to a positive future, I want to start with this. This is what the Federal Reserve Board looks at. They're pretty smart people. They're not great forecasters, by the way, but they're pretty smart people. And that blue line going up says, with a confidence rating of 94, that the economy is going to get better in 2016. I'm going with this one a lot, but more important than that, I see employment going up. Now, the rate of employment rise is slowing down. We're going to talk about that in just a second. But we're at record high employment, and notice that the job openings are at 21% above year-ago levels. We can't find enough people to fill jobs in this country. We used to backfill immigration, we don't. Separate matter, separate discussion, not for today. But that means that with all those job openings, 5.75 million, as a matter of fact, a record high, that we're going to have to pay more to get qualified people. And my guess is a lot of you are going through this. We want people with skills, not that easy to find. We want people with a great attitude. We'll settle for a good attitude, not easy to find. And by that I mean showing up for work on time, 5 days in a row, and not thinking it's worthy of a ribbon of some kind. You know, it's just, who could I get today? You know, that kind of thing. And yeah, there are people like that. There's, And the third thing we want is for them to pass the drug test. Three things we want. Not so much in Colorado anymore, but... What's that?
What are you going to do?
What are you going to... Absolutely. Colorado, actually, is not much of a problem. And companies still drug test, but... three things. Because of those three things, there's one thing you can count on, that's wages will be going up. Minimum wage going up is not your issue. And it's a minimal impact on your life, if it has any impact on your life as a taxpaying citizen. What you want to be concerned about is the fact that everyday wages are going to be going up because they're going up now. And they're going to continue to go up for the next 15 years. You're going to be paying more and more for people. The more lean that you get, the better off you're going to be. The more that a process is automated, the better off you're going to be. The more that you can steal from competitors, the better off you're going to be. The more that you put money into training, the better off you're going to be. Your number one issue as you go forward is going to be, what are we going to do about labor? Because you cannot just go out of the country and get it like we used to. We don't do that anymore. Our friends in Canada are very good at it. And we're not. And it's not that the fertility rate, which is the amount of children a woman in her childbearing years has in the course of her lifetime, is bad in this country. It's actually very good at 1.9. But it had thinned down. So we actually have an hourglass in the United States. Baby boomers, Gen Xers, which are 35 to 55, and then the millennials down here. So we have this temporary problem. So when the baby boomers die, everything gets better. And the Gen Xers, all kinds of blue sky opens up for the last 5 years of your career, then you're going to walk into the Great Depression. Congratulations, at your peak earning years, it's a that sell the business in 2028, okay? That's I might suggest you sell it to somebody you don't like. That's emotionally rewarding. Or leave it for your children. Also emotionally rewarding. When you hear somebody say that people are working part-time jobs, that's my bullet point there, 11% below year-ago levels, and that number is getting larger all the time. There are a lot less people now than before working part-time jobs to make up for a full-time job. And really, that's a skills issue as much as anything else. The quit rate is rising. That's a danger for you. A lot of your employees are ready to quit because they know that they have the skills. You've trained them. You've given them opportunity. You've made them marketable, and they'll go somewhere else, either because they don't like the climate or they don't like you. You ask them to work overtime one too many times. You've asked them to do something they didn't want to do, and they're just showing more and more that they're ready to quit. And managing that marketplace, your employees, is going to be a major challenge for you. All of this says that as the employment sector slows down, the blue line being the rate of change in employment, how that's bending downward, that's going to slow down the amount of retail sales going on through an outlet of your product, building materials, garden equipment, and supply stores. It is a nice cyclical correlation. So as the employment rate of rise slows, it has a slowdown impact on the demand pull from the stores. That doesn't necessarily mean your product, because your product is not necessarily a large part of the stores, but that means less foot traffic, and it could mean that there's a slowdown in activity. And the only way to test this is to get industry association data and test it, or do it at the company level, one or the other. But when we look at that, what people will spend, the personal consumption expenditure on plantings, flowers, seeds, potted plants, etc., which is obviously the world you're living in, that blue line going down means there's more downside pressure in what people are willing to spend in this realm. So we believe that it's going to be pretty mild. It's not going to last a long time. But it does mean to me that there's likely to be a slower rate of growth in your future for the next, you know, 2 quarters or so, maybe a little less. And that's caused by a slowdown in employment. Underneath this, consumer credit is good. So those that are working, those that are out there doing their thing, they're in a good spot. We're not adding a lot of credit. Our debt levels are going up, but we're managing it extremely well. We're saving at 4.7% clip. We're not behind in our debts. And our wages overall are going up. I know on the right-hand side, you see wages have been going down, but that always does that, which is why I showed you the longer view. Since the end of the Great Recession, wages have been generally going up. When you hear politicians say they're going down, really, really? Taking a data point and extrapolating long-term, bad idea. And when you look at the average earnings in a few different ways, and the bottom red line is overall private sector workforce, the average annual earnings, and being average, it obviously takes care of the problem of more people in the workforce, that line's going up, not down. So when you hear a politician say wages are going down or flat, I want you to remember this graphic, please. And know that you're talking to somebody who doesn't know where to get data and how to put it into a chart. This comes from the federal government. So if you're listening to a politician tell you that, somebody who's not even going to their own sources to verify what's going on. Disposable personal income, up, the blue line. What I'd like you to take away from this is when that blue line goes up, every time the blue line goes up, we have economic expansion. You have an economic contraction when the line goes down. It's going up. So the economy's going to do well, and your customers and consumers are going to do well. Retail sales are doing well. We're expanding at 2.4%. That's going to slow. I know it's going to slow. I know that from the rates of change. I know that from leading indicators, but it's only going to slow to 2.1% growth by the end of this year. That's healthy enough to keep the economy on a positive footing and for you to sell products. And you're going to continue to sell products. And next year, we think that retail sales are going to climb to a growth rate of 3.9%. That's really nice. And if we took gasoline out of total retail sales, we would have a growth rate right now of 4.6%. Because gasoline prices are plummeting, that's dragging this line down. And if gasoline prices were normalized flat, what we would find is that consumers are spending at a very healthy 4.6% clip. They're out there, they're buying, they're yours. All you have to do is convince them to buy your product. And that comes down to marketing and competitive advantages, not the economy. So if you're not gaining market share, if you're not growing as much as everybody else, it's not a function of the economy at this point. It's a function of your marketing and your competitive advantages and having to be sharp on both. When we look at retail sales and how it relates to the smaller segment of retail sales with the building materials, garden equipment, and supplies, the little slowdown in retail sales likely to, you know, slow down a little the retail sales of the smaller segment. There's nothing real serious going on. And the rates of change here are rather flat for building materials and garden supplies. It's just going to be That bottom blue line is going to slow in its rate of rise a little bit. We're just going to keep selling product. We're going to see that people are buying. You're going to continue to have the throughput. Your life is good. People would love to have your life. When we look at what's happening in the personal consumption compared to retail sales, again, people are going to spend a little less in this marketplace, but they are 11% above year ago levels. So it comes all the way down to 5% above year ago levels. That's still 5% above year ago levels. That means you're selling more. And as the throughput, the demand is there, the throughput will continue to reach you, and you're going to like life as we go forward. You have to ask yourself if you're ready for it. The personal consumption part has got a definite rate of changes on the negative side. You can see that. The 12-month moving total has leveled off at an incredible $32.3 billion. That's good, obviously, to be at a record high, and we're going to see that stays at about that level. We're not going to see a recession occur. Housing is on your side too, by the way. I wanted to show you this quickly. I'm going to do this real quickly. Is that if you follow consumer expectations from the University of Michigan and you want to use that as a leading indicator, this chart is just to show you that there's no reason to. The monthly data trend is not helpful. When you make it into a rate of change, you can get more help. But on a monthly basis, this, I don't know, I look at this and I can see, just because I look at charts all day, I can see this thing can go down while retail sales are going up. And I can look at retail sales and see it going down while the consumer expectations are going up for the month. And really, on a monthly basis, you're watching noise and you're making decisions based upon waves. Very difficult to do. You don't want to do that. You want to smooth it out into a rate of change. And it's the same thing with personal consumption expenditures, what people are going to do based upon how they're feeling. Look at 2003, for instance. Consumer expectations were going down as people were spending more on things that you care about. And then when you look at 2008, people were starting to feel better as they were cutting back in their spending, which really means you can't depend upon people's feelings for how things are going. And think about it. They're phoning people at home during the day. What does that tell you? They're not phoning you at work, are they, to find out how you feel? This is on a rate of change basis, accurate, improves accuracy. On a monthly basis, it has the accuracy of flipping a coin. That's the data. So it's just like flipping a coin. Would you make business decisions based upon a coin flip? Probably not. Ignore this. It's not going to help you. Pending home sales. That's good, because we spend lots of money fixing up our homes for sale. So as people are buying our homes, that means we're prepping our homes, which means there's product being bought. In other words, except the South, things are looking really good. When we look at the amount of starts going on, that's really good, because that means there are contractors buying and planting, and there are new homeowners who are moving in who are going to be buying and planting and using your product. And if you sell through lumber stores, they're feeling good about what's happening in housing, and housing's going to continue to improve. Housing, the rates of change were positive, and as they were positive, we're going to see a little leveling off, and then we're going to see things get stronger in 2016. Housing is going well because the affordability is there, because interest rates are so doggone low, because the student loan debts are not crushing despite what you see, because mom and dad are helping them out. There's a transfer of wealth going on before your death and my death. Something like 64% of us support our kids to some level or another. In case you're wondering if you're the only one, far from it. If you're not, you're in the minority. And you may want to know why you're not. Your kids are successful or you have no heart, one or the other. There's one of those things. I picked you out for a reason, kid, you know, that kind of thing. So something's going on. First-time home buyers doing their thing. Existing home sales doing well. Look at the rates of change. That's cool. Look at the 12-month moving total at the bottom, at the highest level in 7-plus years. They have a seasonal rising trend in existing home sales that's 2 times steeper than normal. This is all positive. This means that there's a demand pull coming for what you do. And consumers are in good shape. The housing market is in good shape. Housing prices are moving up. There's no reason for you to be depressed about the future. There's every reason for you to feel good. Now, I know the Architectural Billing Index, a lot of them are below 50. We want 50 to feel good. But they're moving in the right direction. And the inquiries number is really healthy at 61.8. And that's a leading indicator to the leading indicator. So things are looking good when it comes to the Architectural Billing Index for the future. Remodeling, which is where a lot of what you do, I'm sure, ends up. Everything's above 50 and moving up. Across the country, people are fixing, they're nesting, they're doing things that will need what you do. So everywhere I look, everywhere I know how to look, my outlook is the same for you. The consumer is good, the economy is good, the people are coming to this country to build, people are coming to this country to do. We are nesting and building and growing, and we're in good shape financially, and that means you should feel good about life. There's no reason for you not to. If you have a reason not to, I'd like to hear it when we get to the Q&A. And the National Remodeling Market Index, index that says that life is stable. So life is stable is good through the short term. It's certainly not negative. One last thing on housing. You recognize these four people? That's Volcker on the left. A lot of people don't recognize Paul Volcker. Tall, pretty tall man. Then Alan Greenspan, who looks kind of confused. Dr. Bernanke and then Janet Yellen. I want you to see what interest rates did in their tenure. This is what interest rates have done. This is a classic case of correlation without causation. Here's my forecast. The next Fed chair is taller than Janet Yellen. Simple as that. And that red line has already reached a trough. You can see that. And here's their forecast. This was back in July. This was in September. I wanted you to see there's very little change. The Fed is saying interest rates going up. Interest rates going up, and they're going to be going up for years. Just wanted everybody to know beforehand, and everybody in my business knows you never bet against the Fed. The Fed says interest rates are going up. Guess what interest rates are going to do? They're going to go up, absolutely. If interest rates are going up like this, which, by the way, this means a 30-year fix goes to 7.5. This means the prime rate goes to 6.5, which I heard, you know, Nick up here, you know, making noise about that. But for those of us that are older, that's like, oh, okay. Because we remember it higher than that. 7.5 was a good rate. I see you're nodding your head. And either you're ill or you agree with me, one or the other. You could be both. You remember? Okay. But the point is, Nick doesn't. That means there's going to be a whole lot of people out there that go, oh my gosh, what do we do with that? They've never lived with inflation. They've never lived with steadily higher interest rates. They have no idea what that means for life. Our job is to train them up in how to run a business in a period of inflation with higher interest rates. What's the first thing you do when you know interest rates are going up and banks have more money than they know what to do with? What's the first thing you do?
Borrow.
How much do you borrow?
Everything.
As much as you can. Until you can't sleep at night anymore, that kind of money. You know, you want to load it up. You have 15 years to pay it back. That's all I'm telling you. You don't want to carry that into the Great Depression. But you want to go out there and load it up. And what's a great asset to buy when you know that inflation's coming? Real estate. Absolutely, because those rental rates are going to go up with inflation and your costs are going to be relatively fixed except for the tax rate. So you are going to make money and more money and more money, and your asset value is going to go up, and in 15 years you're going to sell that asset for a huge bundle of cash, and you're going to think, what a great day that was in Orlando. Probably not. Those are my dreams. But you're going to make money. Or you're going to expand your business using the bank's capital, not your own. I want you to also see that manufacturing in this country is going really well for these reasons, and that's really important because that means that people are coming here and the economy is strong. These reasons are solid. I want you to see that we make cars here for export. This automobile industry in this country is powerful, and it is an emblem of how we do things right. We have a very high labor rate. We have the second highest corporate tax rate in the world, and yet we produce cars here to export to South America. It used to be just the stolen ones. That's a big deal. Honda makes cars in Ohio to send back to Asia. Who would have thought? GM makes a car that we want to buy instead of being guilted into buying, if you remember back 15 years. Who would have thought? This country is going through a renaissance, and it's a beautiful thing. That's your world. That's the world your kids are going to populate. That's the world that we have going for us for the next 15 years. It's phenomenal. Corporate profits are up. That's that green line. That means economic expansion. Construction is on a rise. That's good for everybody in the room. Because besides the residential side, you have commercial landscaping going on. With all that word rising going on, it means there's activity. There's potential on the commercial side as well. And with all of this in place, all of my bullishness wrapped up on this list, which I'm not going to read to you because there's no reason for me to, it means that you need to act. And as you act, I hope it's in these areas. You find out where you are in the business cycle so you can plan. You get serious about marketing. This is the time to get serious about marketing. If you don't have a CMO because you're not large enough, like my firm is not large enough, you go to a fractional CMO. And you go to a company called Chief Outsiders. And they're in Houston, they're in Atlanta, they're across the country. Chief Outsiders. I mean nothing, by the way. I'm just pointing in the direction of the company that I like and that I use. And you get serious about marketing. And then you develop your competitive advantages. Here's a little test for you. Go home. Gather senior management, or maybe some middle management too, depending on the size of your firm, and you sit them down without talking to each other, and you say, write down for me the top three or four competitive advantages that we have, and see if they can. And then you want to compare those lists and see if they're the same things, and you want to see if they're even close to the same order, if they're the same things. And if they can't do that successfully, I guarantee you that means your company does not have a clear message to its customers. And if you can't do it internally, your customers have no idea what your competitive advantage is. They have no idea why they're buying from you except on price. You got to do that when you get home. And you got to develop those clear competitive advantages so that you can grow market share. This is not going to be a super economy. This is not a bubble. This is just steady growth. If you want to grow market share on other than price, it's by competitive advantages. Marketing, competitive advantages. You do that, you're going to have a great run. You're going to enjoy life. If I've left something out, send an email in, and my team will be glad to answer it. And they'll be glad to help you in any way that they can. They're there for you as a resource to, how can I learn more about it? How can I see about it? What do I understand Alan's mean about? On any of that sort of stuff. With them as a background, let me stop and answer questions in the time that's remaining. Yes, sir.
So, from a policy standpoint, where are we on the liquidity injection?
Where are we on the liquidity?
What's your opinion?
Was quantitative easing worthwhile? Was it something that had a positive impact on the economy?
Yeah, yes.
And the answer to that would be no. There's no proof of that. There's no proof that it hurt a lot, although culturally it had a negative impact, but on the economic front, there's no proof that it helped, and there's no proof that it hurt. It just gave government something to do and point to, and they're hoping for a psychological boost. It did create, according to several sources, not least of which is the chief economist of the Department of Labor, the massive spread between the rich getting richer so much faster than everybody else. Because all that liquidity was made available to Wall Street, and the only people who have access to Wall Street are the top 5%ers, and the top 1%ers in particular, and so they grabbed the money and they did stuff with it, while everybody else had no access to the cash. And that created this imbalance that we hear about all the time. Yes, sir.
What do you think about the timing of a business cycle? I heard about a couple months ago, everybody talked about a 10-year cycle, and they're right in it, down in 13, down hard again in 23. Describe that theory, or is it right?
No, there is a time to the business cycle. The years you mentioned are wrong, because 13 was really just a soft landing. There was no recession yet. It goes from recession to recession on a 10-year cycle. And the last recession was 2008-09. So the next one that's coming is 2018-19. Begins in 18, we really feel like 19. We're forecasting that one's pretty mild. On the industrial production basis, just down 3.4%, which makes it in between the early 2000s, early 1990s. Nothing like the Great Recession. But about every 10 years, we do have a recession in this country. There's an intermediate business cycle which led to 13, but that's a longer discussion. The recession ones happen about, and the emphasis is on the word about, every 10 years, which obviously leads nicely to 2030 or the Great Depression. If you're wondering what that's going to be like, by the way, is the 1930s with technology. Massive unemployment, massive dislocation, massive business failures, no bank failures because laws are different. Just all kinds of social problems going on. But we'll know where the best food is being handed out because it'll be on our iPhone. They're going to have maps to get there. At least it'll be easy. What else?
Well, if we have that much time to prepare for the Great Depression, is it avoidable? I mean, can policy or are we just doomed to repeat all of our past mistakes?
Well, Joe, I like the way you put it. As you gave me extremes, which is really good. Are we doomed to repeat? And the answer is we're not doomed to repeat. Are there policy things? The answer is yes. Will we do the policy things? The answer is no. Because the policy things are politically untenable, because we have to elect people who will say, I'm going to really tighten up, we're going to cause a recession, we're going to really stop the federal spending, which means that the 51% that are receiving a pension or food stamps or something every month, you're going to see a cutback in that. We're going to see a cutback in the health care that we're providing to people. We're going to have to rein this puppy in order to avoid a Great Depression later, and nobody will get elected on that platform. So, are there things we can do? Yes, but it would take an emperor to do it, not a two-year election cycle in Congress. So I abandon all hope, Joe. You should just. I detected a shred of optimism. That just does not belong there. Over there, there's a gentleman with the hand up. Yes, sir.
What do you see? Do you see oil prices staying where they currently are for a couple of years yet?
I think they're going to go up to 58 to 62 by the end of 2016. Then they're going to go up some more in 2017. perfectly sustainable, helps the oil industry, helps countries around the world, and it is not a large negative on consumers. So oil prices are bound to go up. I know there are plenty of folks out there pointing at 20 and others that are pointing at 120. We're taking the rational road, we believe, based on leading indicators and cyclical theory that we use that says 58 to 62.
So you're thinking we've seen the bottom and we're just going to ride this little 45, 55 for 6 or 8 months?
More like 5, and then we're going to start seeing it slowly move up every day. Some days down, but obviously the overall trend will be positive. And, you know, it's like boiling anything. It'll happen slowly. Next thing you know, it'll be at 60. We're all going, oh, wow, that wasn't so bad. So we're not 15 bucks. Big deal. Didn't hurt. Nobody wants to see 120 again. Nobody that produces, because that's when you really push people into alternative forms of energy. And that's really bad for the oil and gas industry. So I think they're going to really work to moderate this. Yes, sir.
When you talk about the interest rates going up, you mentioned that the interest on the debt could become 25% of the annual budget, I think you said.
Yes.
When I think of that number, it's just overwhelming to the pessimistic side of what you said about the two-year election cycle. Given that we're not going to do much about that, does that just mean that we're just going to run higher and higher and higher debts until what's the correcting action?
Okay. The gentleman asked if you're just going to continue to run higher and higher debts, you know, because the projection of 25% of the federal budget by the Congressional Budget Office, by the way, the people who are supposed to know these things, it is scary, and the answer is yes. They are projecting that Congress will continue to just raise debt ceilings. We're just going to continue to see higher and higher debt because it is politically untenable to do otherwise. And the corrective action is the Great Depression. And following along with the Great Depression, which is a massive cutback in government spending, which they just won't have the cash, they won't be able to borrow it, it's a global problem. I did not get into that today because it's an extra, you know, 10 minutes. Let me see if I can get it down into one. Japan's got worse problems than we do, so Japan's the first domino to go. Russia is screwed up 6 ways to Sunday, so Russia is going to feel lots of pain. We've already discussed a little bit of China's problems. Germany forgot to have children, too. Japan forgot a lot longer ago. Germans now just don't want children. They tell me, by the way, it's because they're expensive and a pain in the neck, and I go, well, yeah, but anyway. Canadians don't have children, but they import them. The Brits have a worse debt problem than we do. We're third in the world. It's Japan, the Brits, and us. So the Brits are going to fall. And so we have all those nations in the same boat. And it's this question, the first domino leads to the second to the third, and after the first two, it really doesn't matter where we are, whether we're third or fifth. We feel the pain. There's nobody to buy our debt. And as there's nobody to buy our debt, then it's game over. We can't borrow to spend. We can't spend. It slowly begins to heal when the spending stops. Now, you may be thinking, well, let's just inflate our way out of it. Nobody's done that successfully. It's always a theory that economists and government has, but nobody has done that successfully. It always ends in extreme pain for the economy because everybody knows you're doing it. So they just demand even higher interest rates because of the inflation in your currency. It's called monetization of debt. It doesn't work. You can default on it, but we're the United States of America. We can't. If we do, the entire world crumbles. But even if we did, you only get to do that once. So if you haven't changed your spending habits, you know, you find yourself, I mean, Argentina can do it more than once, and Nepal can do it more than once, but we're the United States. We only get one shot at this. So if we default, we have to live within our means. We don't have any choice. The easiest thing is to wait for us to die, you and me. Because all the spending goes away. And the Gen Xers go, finally. The millennials go, I knew it all along. You know, when they ask you how you're feeling at work tomorrow, they do not want to hear well. They want to hear slipping. Okay? All right, thank you all very much. Appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you.